bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Welcome to the Photo Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and for the next 40 minutes or so, you've got me talking you through all of the photographic news from the week, all the stories that are out there, all of that kind of stuff, the products that have been released, absolutely everything, and also answering your questions. You've got a question, send it to me, I'll read it out, and I'll try and answer it as best I can. We've had some good ones again this week. Thank you to the people that have sent a question in. It's your questions that keep the end of the show going. The last 20 minutes or so is all yours. So if you've got a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and I will read it out and answer it as best I can. We've had some reviews. Thank you to the people that left reviews. First one is from Jacques. He says, I've been listening for over a year now. Love the show, and great for a British take on the photography world. I tend to get a little bored of the US podcasts. Since you've lost the other members of the team, I have to admit, though, that this has lost something for me. I'm sorry. It's all right, mate. You don't need to apologise. Needs must to a certain degree. Surely there are enough photographers out there who would help out. Even so, it's well worth the listen. Thanks for being honest, Jack. It's okay, mate. I don't have a problem with that at all. Are there other photographers out there? Yes, but the thing is, this is a school day. And not everyone works on a school day. I haven't worked on a Friday for ages because of doing these and all the other shows. So if there are photographers out there that want to join in, that's fine. But the other problem is as well, I can't kind of go from like a panel show with five people on it to then doing it myself again the following week. If people want to do it and they want to commit to doing it, more than welcome to send in. But there has to be a consistent format as far as I'm concerned. That's the only thing. And as I say, Alex is still out working, and Chris is raising a new baby and doing a software engineer's job. So there you go. Andy, this is an awesome show that caters for all comers in the field of photography. Ewan's holding his own very well at the moment, but he and the other guys have always been very generous with their advice and time. What really comes across is the breadth and depth of knowledge and experience being offered. Fortunately, it's presented in a fun and easy to digest manner that anyone can get to grips with. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Andy, thank you very much. And Adam's written down, great news, great advice, and overall kept professionally informed. A great show from the British Tech Network. I can't find a fault at all. Do appreciate that as well, Adam. Thank you very much. So, the photo news to start us off then. What's been going on? One of the projects that's out there is a thing called the 4AM project. I heard about this briefly last year for the first time. But they've been going for 4 years, and they've decided that 14th of April, they were going to have a fantastic event where across the globe, at 4 a.m, people would go out and would take pictures of their towns, villages and so on, and try and capture the moment of the 4 a.m. Birmingham held its own, and it was organised by a lady named Karen Strunks, and she actually holds the social media cafe here in Birmingham and runs all of that. And she said, you know, let's have one. It's brilliant. Well done. Good on you, Karen. And she went to the Bullring Shopping Centre. Now, if you haven't been to the Bullring Shopping Centre here in the UK, it's a very impressive architectural building. It looks gorgeous, and it's got a nice big bull out the front that's like the bullets in New York by the stock market. But the problem is they're not renowned for their laxness when it comes to photography. They don't let any pictures at all once you've crossed their boundary, and they own an awful huge amount of area that looks like it's public and it's not. So there's no photography at all without permission. If you do go and ask permission, they do give it you, so it's not draconian, but there's absolutely no tripods, absolutely no bag being left around or anything like that, for health and safety reasons, allegedly, which is fine. On a busy shopping day, it does get very busy down there, but Karen managed to secure the efforts of the Bullring Shopping Centre and the whole area, and as a result, they issued a whole loads of do's and don'ts. The walk will take place in Bullring's external spaces only. So they didn't even open up the shopping centre for them. Shopping centre's completely and utterly closed. They couldn't go in at 4 a.m. You can only take wider scenic shots, but you can't photograph directly into the stores or windows or the shop fronts, which is going to be really difficult to do in the front of a shopping centre. No tripods or monopods or lighting equipment will be allowed. This is for health and safety reasons and insurance purposes. It's 4 a.m. It's 4 a.m. in the morning. Yes, that one. You're taking part in the project at your own risk. However, there are lots of tips out there on night photography without using a tripod. It's a reasonably well-lit area, so it's not going to be horrific. But if they turn the streetlights out, you're knackered. You're not going to take a picture of anything apart from the inside of your pocket. Keep your personal belongings with you at all times. If you can't carry something, don't bring it. And if you want to use your images of the ballroom commercially, you'll need to discuss with them directly about arranging to use them. I don't have a problem with any of the last bit there, but the problem with the tripods and monopods and lighting equipment, that's ridiculous, because lighting equipment means you can't bring a flash. You're going to go out and you're not going to take a flash with you. Crazy. There's no residence there either, so you're not going to bother anyone. Well done, 4am Project. Well done, Karen Strunks. And bad luck for all the idiots that work at the Bullring Shopping Centre and have put all those draconian measures on. Not impressed. Not impressed at all. Nikon is the next story. They filed a patent in Japan. Now, this was actually filed last year in December 2012 for... it's kind of like a link between your lens and your body. So when you attach your lens, you kind of bind the two together and then you can have a passcode. The inspiration for it has come from using smartphones where you have to tap in your code before you can start using it. Once you've bound the lens to the body, then you put in your passcode whenever you want to use it or if you take the lens off. If all of the kit goes missing, that's fine. But if someone detaches the lens and the body, if they then put it back together without the passcode, neither the body nor the lens will then work, which I think is an absolutely fabulous idea. I'm all for that, and I hope if Nikon have got it, they're willing to license it out at a sensible price to all the other camera manufacturers, because they have been awarded the patent. It's definitely gone through. There's no more details than that, and the patent was written in Japanese, and it's apparently the literal translation of it's not particularly brilliant at explaining how it's all going to work, but your stuff will be protected. If it's Nikon only, then well done. They've got the patent and someone else should have thought of it first. But if you can see them licensing it out, I really hope they do. I'd love to see this come on camera bodies and lenses for DSLR. And the market in DSLR is pretty good at the moment, so they should be able to sell it on. Not bad at all. Well done, Nikon. We like that. David Bailey has shouted out at the government, the aging photographer. You know, the thing is, you remember what drinking, smoking and women does to you. Have a look at a picture of David Bailey now. You see, it's really not worth it. Though I've seen some of the women that he took pictures of. It. Maybe it is. He's had a go at the government over the Orphan Works Bill. Now, Orphan Works over here, Orphan Works are when you've got no one who can be identified as being the rightful owner of an image. And the government's proposed legislation that says if there are Orphan Works out there, then the Orphan Works can go out to the public domain and anyone can use them for any purpose. And it's a good idea, effectively. But Bailey's problem is that orphans are being created constantly by irresponsible net providers. In a letter to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, he said he's appalled by the government's stance and calls for the subject to be dealt with properly, I quote, in a separate copyright bill and not be left to a general bill. This follows on from the story that we had the other week where we talked about the EXIF data and the IPTC data being stripped off images by certain internet providers, Flickr, Yahoo, Google, and put up onto the net. Google's pretty good with it. Flickr and Yahoo and Facebook, not so much. Basically, once your ITPC or EXIF data is gone, there is no way of tracing that image directly back to you at all. It just gets removed and that's it. You're done and dusted. If you've got the original image and you've clearly got the EXIF data on it, that would stand up in a court if you did take anyone to court. But it's a lot more of a rigmarole than just asserting your copyright via some kind of takedown notice or a letter just to say, hey, come on, take it off. He's right in what he's saying. The only thing I would say is that looking at images now online and believing that you have copyright control over them is a bit of a dinosaur kind of way of looking at it. I'm not suggesting David Bailey's a dinosaur, but you know, photographers across the world have got to realise if you start letting your images go out online, you are no longer going to have rights of ownership over them. I am very careful what I post online. You don't see awful lots of my work online, not because I don't do work. Some of it's I can't publish it because it's commercial sensitive stuff, but a lot of it is the fact that once I put it out there, I know it's gone, plain and simple. I cannot control it. So if it's not mine, it's not mine. It's gone. So don't put your stuff online unless you want to lose it. And the same applies to David. And don't drink and smoke and shag really beautiful women, because that's what happens to you. See? Not good. Not good at all. As you can see, I don't drink much. I don't smoke at all. And as for women, I'm married. Next iPhone rumor is that there is going to be a 12 megapixel camera coming on it. Now, traditionally, the S variants have always done pretty well for the photographic elements. I think the 4S went up to 8 megapixel, and we had the faster transition with version 5 of iOS and that kind of thing, so you could take more rapid pictures and be ready to shoot more quickly. This version, they reckon, is going to come out with a 12 megapixel camera. It's going to improve low light performance. Now, if they're going to improve low light performance, I would suggest that they're probably either come up with some fantastic technology for the sensor, or they're going to increase the sensor size just a little bit, which wouldn't be a bad thing. And they're talking about having HDR in it. Well, you've got a pseudo HDR in inverted commas, if you like, in your current setup, haven't you? But this is supposed to be a more realistic HDR, or more what's the word, you know, where it's authentic HDR process rather than a fudged one which was in there before. But as I say, the S variant, 5S, is going to have better stuff on it. I think 12 megapixels is a good thing. I think that's not bad at all, providing they've keep the quality up. The, you know, the megapixels are not the only thing, but it's got to have a lot more. There are phones out there with better sensors, said Adam. The Xperia Z has got 13 megapixels with XMOR sensors. S4's got 13 megapixels. Yeah, S4's got a very good camera in it. I've seen some test shots of that, and I saw the S3, and it was very good. Windrider in the chat room says bigger sensor would be a good idea. I know they're packed for space in there, but they've done better and so on with the battery and reducing the size. I took my iPhone 4 apart last year after I really smashed it on the front, and I had a look at the camera module while I got it out, and the actual camera module is extremely small. It's basically, if you look at the circle that the camera sits in, the square behind it is it. That is the sensor and processing unit. So it's very small to begin with. So yeah, bigger sensor would be nice. Last thing it needs is more megapixels, says Ultimate Games. Well, yeah, I agree in terms of megapixels is not the answer to the question. Megapixels is about improving your image size, but unless your quality goes with it, it is a waste of time. I'll agree. You don't just need a bigger sensor. There you go. That was the news. Those are the stories this week. There's not been an awful lot, really. Most of it has actually been concentrated on the products. And there's quite a few product releases this week. Some are interesting, some not so interesting. This one is the Nikon L28. It's relatively new. It's been out a week or two. It's a 20 megapixel camera. Yes, you heard me right. 20 megapixels in a compact camera. I would not get too excited, however, because it's not a huge camera, so this is not going to be a huge sensor. Megapixel increase plus big sensor is even better, says Windrider. Yes, that's the key. It's not just the megapixels. This thing's got a 5x optical zoom. It's a fully automated camera. And you're going, okay, well, they've all got a full automation feature. No, this camera is automated. There's no manual settings on it at all. You can't do manual exposure, nothing. You take this on auto, or that's it. And there's actually a second auto mode called easy auto mode. And easy auto mode actually selects the correct mode of photography. So you could select that you want to take a portrait, but if you put it on easy mode, it knows whether it's a portrait, a landscape, or anything like that. It's real, real simple. It does everything for you. It's also got a feature in it called the smile timer, which has absolutely nothing to do with time at all. It doesn't time anything. Effectively, when you've got it on smile timer, it looks at the image, and if someone smiles, the camera takes a picture whether you press the shutter or not. It just went off in me hands, Mom. Yes, it did. How big a smile you have to have, I don't know. It would be nice to think that there'd be a full smile timer as opposed to a partial smile timer. Everyone's going to have a sick grin on their face through every picture that you take. It doesn't run on rechargeable batteries. It runs on twin AA batteries. You could stick your own rechargeables in, but there's no recharging port. There's no external dial controls on this thing at all. It is very simple. There is an on and off switch on the top, and then there is a wide angle and telephoto zooming button, and then a shutter button, and that is it. There's a flush flash, which it decides when it wants to use, not you. There's only four settings available inside, which looks at the basic resolution of the image, so you can downscale or upscale your images on the megapixel. White balance, burst mode, and color options as well. There is no ISO setting on this thing. Not a thing. No worries at all. No, you can't even get lost in what ISO is. That doesn't give you the option to change a damn thing, even in the software. The only thing that has got variants on it is the white balance. So you can have auto, or you can have cloudy, or you can have tungsten light or fluorescent light, and all of the big options for white balance, which most people don't understand anyway, they're all in there. You can pick those as you want, but nothing else. That's it. It shoots at 6 frames per second in burst mode, which is not particularly huge, but the problem is once it's shot 6 frames, according to the review I read, it takes 25 seconds to write it to the card, almost regardless of what card you put in. So it's not based on the speed of the card. It's based on the fact this thing can't process them. It's that bad at processing. Apparently, the bulge on the top there as well that you can see is to allow the space for the batteries, because the batteries cause the bulge. So that gives you a clear indication of just how small this camera is. It's not big at all. Give me an idea on price here, chat room, and I'll tell you what the actual price is. But just give me your perceptions while I'm reading the last bit out. And it only shoots 720p video. It doesn't shoot 1080p video at all. So how much would you pay for this camera? I'm waiting for the chat room to come back with what they would pay for this camera in their relative currency. 200 quid, says Rick. So that's a good entry camera. 200 quid, it's kind of disposable. Windrider reckons it's $900. No, it's not, mate. Here's the shocker. £74. Yep, you heard me right, £74. You can get it at Amazon in a red version at the moment for 74 quid. And I've got to say, I looked at that and thought, bloody hell, this is a piece of crap. Well, it is, but it's a cheap piece of crap. And it's perfect to buy and give the kids. I would buy that for 74 quid and give it to my little girl and say, darling, here's your very first camera. Off you go. Because she loves taking pictures with her mum's camera. I'm scared with her mum's phone. I'm scared to death of her dropping her mum's phone. So to give her a £74 camera that she'll probably use for a couple of years, it'll probably still take reasonably decent photos. They're not going to be that bad, are they? And she'd be very happy with them. She can shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, fill a card up, and then I can take them all and save them. We can print the odd one out if she manages to capture them. There's Briny's first masterpiece and all that kind of thing. 74 quid's all right. Well done. I've got no problem with that. The review was on a professional camera blog, and they gave it an absolute pasting. And I thought, you've missed the point here, guys. That's not what this is aimed at. This is aimed at someone who wants to buy a camera for a 4-year-old, to a 6-year-old, to a 10-year-old, to a 90-year-old grandma who wants to really, really, really point and shoot, nothing else. So, well done, Nikon. I think you can safely say with that one, you're in the complete range of cameras, all the way up and all the way down. Lightroom's got a new version out in beta, the Granny Cam. Says Windrider. Let me just get a pen, because I think that might be the title, mate. The Granny Cam. Lightroom's out this week. Version 5, it's in beta. You can go and have a download and a trial of it if you want. There's loads and loads of new features. One of them looks pretty good. It's the ability to stand things upright. So there's a picture here of a couple of horses in a paddock, and because of the angle that you're at, there's like a keystone effect on the thing that goes over the top of them. And what it does is it looks at the image and it crops it. Admittedly, you're not going to get full image quality on this, but it crops it and it gives you a very square view of the fence to correct your keystone effect, or maybe even it'll do something with a fisheye effect as well. Pricing's the same as ever. There's no change on price when it comes out, but as I say, they're in beta at the moment only. There's an improved healing brush for greater ability to change and correct faults. The radial gradient feature helps to look for faults in vignetting issues and things like that. There's a thing called smart previews as well, which lets you change around through the previews that you want to look at based on keywords or on values. And there's a video slideshow. And this will let you take any stills, any video, or any music that you've got and turn them into a small slideshow at the duration that you want. and output them as a movie file for you to show on something else. And also, there's an upgrade to the book ordering process. Whether there's some templates in there or not, I think there is, but it improves the process of book ordering as well, allegedly. Allegedly. ProDad have released or announced a piece of software called ProDrenaline. Now, ProDrenaline is designed for people who use GoPro cameras or action cameras, that kind of thing. And effectively, it just takes the video that you've shot in the camera, you put it into the system. In the top left-hand corner, you can just see on the image I've got in the video, it says GoPro Hero 3, and it gives you a resolution. And you can say what the resolution that you've shot it at is and whether it was in a case or out of a case and that kind of thing. Does HD2 as well. And it corrects the fisheye on it. It also looks for image stabilization capabilities and it will automatically stabilize the image for you. And then it will let you export it back out as MFV, M4V, so you can put it out as different file types as well. There's no word on the price that it's going to be yet, but there's a program called DFisher from ProDad, which they've sent me as a review copy, and that's only €29, so it's not the end of the world. And I had a play with it, and it's not bad at all. I sent my little helicopter up to take a still image of the local village. So there's the image, a nice big panorama of the local area where I live and the next two villages beyond, up to the church in Kozel on the far side. But it's very fish-eyed. I ran it through the DFisher program, and it's not perfect, but it's an awful lot better. You could probably tweak it a little bit more, but it started to look more unnatural then after that, so I left it alone. But you can definitely see a change, and it's a change for the better. So the ProAdrenaline software will probably do very well in this process. I've also got Mexler, or I can't remember the bloody name of it. It begins with an M, but that's the Steadicam software, and I'm going to have a play with that this week. I haven't had much time to have a mess so far, but I think this is going to be quite good. What's the price going to be? I don't know. If it's hitting around the £30 mark, this would be a really good thing to buy if you're into your GoPro cameras, or even there's a whole list in there of Samsung for correcting your fisheye effects on cell phones. So well worth it. Well worth it. And the lady there, Catherine, that's been dealing with me, lovely, lovely lady as well. I think they're quite a nice firm. So I'll keep you posted when I get reviews or when I get the nod that ProDrenaline's available for download. I'll let everyone know. Frio have released the cold shoe. The cold shoe mount is just a clip that fits on different places and allows you to mount your flash off camera. It doesn't have any trigger capabilities. There's no electronics in it. Effectively, it just lets you latch it onto the stand and put it anywhere you like so that you can get off camera shots. Price, it's a tenner. £9.99 or $12, and that's it. It's very simple. It does what it says on the tin, I suppose, and if you want that, then fair enough. Fuji have released a zoom lens. This is a 55 to 200mm lens, 3.5 to 4.8 on the f-stop. It's going to be to fit your X-Pro 1 or your XE 1, and it's got image stabilization abilities within it as well. And it means that they reckon that they're going to improve shutter speed at low light by 4 to 5 stops, which is absolutely huge if it really does do it. And that's an awful lot of stabilization. It's got 1/3 EV stops aperture ring, a focusing ring, 2 linear motors for high-speed autofocus. And they reckon with this, the high-speed autofocus is going to drag in focus at 0.28 of a second from the press. So you're up to sports lens kind of levels of autofocus there, which is very, very good. Unfortunately, there's nothing on the story that tells when it's going to be available or says what the price is going to be. Chat room are no doubt going to correct me, but there is nothing that I could find on the net this week that showed me how that was going to be. Couple of £100, yes, you'd definitely buy it. It looks like it's fantastic. And I say the speed of autofocus on this is the thing that really leapt out at me. The speed at which it's going to grab things is right up there with very good sports lenses. Also, Fuji has let slip with their roadmap for lenses. 2013, the XF 55-200, you can see it there at the bottom, is coming out. Coming up in the next quarter, we've got the XF 27mm pancake lens with 2.8. Which is going to go into direct competition with the 40mm pancake lens at 2.8, I guess, for video work, but give you just a slightly wider aperture. And then they've got a 23mm lens at f1.4 that's coming out in the last quarter, and also a 10-24 f4 lens as well, which should be nice. And then early part of 2014, there's a 56mm f1.2. So they're looking at the low aperture stuff here, definitely. Well done, Fuji. I'll see what they come out with some images, but so far it looked very promising. Ricoh, do you remember them? Ricoh have released the GR. Now, the GR used to be a 35mm body, and this one looks very reminiscent of what that used to look like. This has got an additional lens that you can screw on the front at additional price, and it's got an optical viewfinder that fits on the top. Electronic viewfinder that fits on this. If you buy the extra lens to give you the wider angle, then it looks like that. Specs on this, it's a 16.2 megapixel APS-C sensor, so it's a larger sensor that's got better light, low light capability. The stories that I read compared this to the Nikon Coolpix A, which is an awful lot more expensive than this one is. It's got ISO ranges from 100 to 25,600, 18mm lens f2.8. That corrects, I think, with crop, though, to 24-ish, something like that, 23. A 1.2 million dot LCD screen on the back that's 3 inches wide. And it'll shoot in JPEG and DNG, SD and SDHC memory cards, and it weighs in at 215 grams, so it's not exactly the end of the world. It's nice and small, nice and compact. It's a good compact camera. Price on this, well, it's competing with a lot of stuff at the quality of image that they're talking about, which is going to be around the £1,000 mark. But the difference with this one is it's coming in at £599, so it's about the $800 mark, which makes it very competitive, maybe. If the quality of the image is good, then you could see a lot of the other more expensive cameras start to miss out on this one. That's a Ricoh GR. Flex Lens have released the product. It's called the Flex Lens, and it's a piece of Velcro that takes a black shade, which is all wibbly-wobbly, and it straps it to your lens. So it's effectively a lens shade, nothing more than that, a lens hood. It only fits over the top. It stops you getting rain on it, and it stops you getting nasty bits of gubbins, perhaps, or a bit of glare off the sun. It's okay. It's fine. The Velcro strap's probably a very quality-made piece of Velcro, but this thing is $40. And I've got to say, if you're going to buy this at $40, you might as well have a sign on your back saying, "Kick me," because it's just not good enough. I'm sorry, I've looked at all the pictures of this online, and this is really a piece of crap. At $40, get yourself a piece of paper and some gaffer tape, same effect. And actually, if you use white paper, you'll get some opacity as well, so you can end up with not stealing all your light with it. It's nasty, and it's not cheap, unfortunately. Don't buy it, whatever you do. And the last product that's come out this week is Sigma. They've released an 18-35mm lens. It's quite compact, but it packs f-stops at 1.8 with a fixed aperture. It looks very, very good. No word on the price on it, unfortunately. That's the key factor with this, but I don't think it's going to be too cheap at that amount, with that amount of zoom. It's got a weight of 810 grams, so it's a fairly hefty lens. There'll be good quality pieces of glass in it at that weight. That's nearly as much as the Canon 24-70, which is a very heavy lens. It's not going to be something that you've seen before. Maybe it's designed for crop factor sensors only, and it's got 9 aperture blades, an ultrasonic autofocus, and silent motors, and it's 72mm filter size, which is not going to be a cheap filter to buy. And you can maximum aperture is going to take you up to f16. Minimum aperture is going to take you up to f16 on it. Max aperture is f1.8. No word on price, no word on availability. So it's kind of like CES, really. But if the price is good and it's sensible, it's sort of the £400 to £500 mark, that'd be a cracking buy. If it's not and it's at £1,200, then I'm afraid they've lost me. Plus the fact that I haven't got a APS-C size sensor. I'm thinking, we'll see. We'll see. Right, thank you. Those are the products. There's no other products. Your questions. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out. We'll do your question. First question comes from Martin. He says, hi, Ewan. I recently inherited a lot of camera gear from my father after he passed away, and I decided I should take up it as a hobby and not just sell it all on. Good lad. He left me a lovely range of equipment, including film and digital, which has clearly been really well looked after. Within the bags, I found lots of odd parts, but particularly I found two filters which look slightly grey to slightly clear. They are 60 millimetres in diameter and have on them a notation which says LBA on one and LBB on the other. I've taken some pictures with these, but I can't tell what they're doing or are supposed to do. Can you help, please? Regards, Martin. Right. LBA is a notation which denotes that it's a warming filter. And LBB is a notation that dictates that it's a cooling filter. So if you're saying they're both fairly clear, though, Martin, that wouldn't be right. Because if it was a warming filter, it would have a distinct yellow tinge to it. And if it was a cooling filter, it would have a distinct grey tinge to it. Now, you're saying that they're grey to clear. So that would probably mean that the cooling filter is still working okay, but the other one shouldn't be. The LBA should be warm. It should be yellow. If it's not yellow or not got a yellow tinge, hold it up to a light and turn it to about 15 degrees to your eye line. And if there is any coating left on it, you should see it. But I'd say that the coatings have been scrubbed off, or the lens has been replaced on it, or the filter's been replaced on it or something, but I can't think why you'd do that. If you're saying it's doing nothing to an image, there's definitely something wrong. And if you're saying that they're not a distinct difference in colour from each other, then there's definitely something wrong. So one's cooling, one's warming. The cooling one should be grey. The warming one should be yellowy, browny, orange. Further than that, I can't help, mate, unless you want to send them to me. I'll gladly have a look at them. Send me an email and I'll send me an address and you can post them on. But there's something wrong with that. That ain't right, I'm afraid. Unless LBA relates to something. I mean, the only other LBA I've seen before is lens buying addiction, which is an amateur disease. Though I've got a fair few lenses myself, it has to be said. No. Don't know, mate. I have no clue. But that doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound right at all. Next one's from John. Hi, Ian. Love the show. Thanks for all your efforts with BTN. Welcome, mate. I listened with interest to this week's show regarding the cropping of images with 3:2 ratios for frame size, which are not built for them. One other issue which bothers me regularly is understanding the optimal size to pixel ratio when editing or outputting for print. I use Lightroom and Elements and just wanted some guidance on what would be the best setup for images. Keep up the PPI or control the image size in millimetres / inches, etc. PPI is points per inch or pixels per inch or that kind of thing. So that's the number of pixels in a given inch squared of density. I don't know. What do I do, I suppose? Whenever you shoot your image and you open it up, by default, it shows you the image and it gives you one pixel to one canvas size. So your canvas size will automatically be 5,000 by 3,000, whatever it is. To give you the accurate image size. So there's no PPI on that to really worry about. If you then want to copy that and paste it into a document that's, say, 8 by 10 or that's 16 by 12 or something like that, then once you've created that image size, you'll create a resolution within that. So when you open your new document, it'll say, right, do you want this at 72 PPI or do you want it at 300 DPI? At 300 DPI, when you copy and then paste that image in, the image will appear to be smaller than if you pasted it into a document which is 72 PPI, because effectively, you know, they're taking the pixels and it's arranging them on that image ratio. In terms of if you create a document, you would always create one in 300 PPI for a printed output, and then when you bring your image in, if you need to resize it, the bicubic interpolation will do well up to about 140% of original size. If you're doing something like an 8 by 10 or a 16 by 12 and you take an image from a raw file, say, and then dump it straight into that document at 300 ppi, you'll should find that the image that you're dumping in is slightly bigger than 16 by 12 when you actually look at it anyway. But if you're, it'd be touch and go. If you're dumping it into an 8 by 10, it should be a fair bit bigger than that. So I would say any of your output formats, you want the image that you're going to send to you to PhotoBox or your online printers to be 300 ppi, and you want to resize the image to crop inside that space while it's a 300 ppi document, and then output it and send it as JPEG or send it as TIFF, whatever they want to see. But is there an optimum? The key to think is that once you've got your raw image there that you've taken out your camera, raw as in just the untouched image, that's going to be in pixels per inch. So, you know, one pixel is one size. The size is the size does. And once you copy that and paste it into the document, you've then got to think whether you're shrinking it to fit that document or expanding it to fit that document. And with 72 ppi, you're going to get a grainier output. So a canvas, for example, you might want to do at 72 or 150 ppi as opposed to 300 ppi, because you won't get the benefit of seeing 300 ppi quality on a canvas that's rippled every quarter centimetre. So there isn't a right or a wrong, but for printed output to, say, like a gloss still, I would always go for 300 ppi. If you're going for canvas, go for less. That'd be fine. Next question is from Gary. Hi, Ewan. Loving the new style of the show. Keep up the great work. Not everyone agrees with you, mate, but thank you very much. The other week you mentioned taking images of the ISS using Bulb. Simply, what is Bulb? I've looked in my manual, but I can't find it. Well, I don't know what camera you've got, Gary, because you haven't specified it. A lot of cameras will come, a lot of DSLRs will come with the Bulb setting. And the Bulb setting is effectively just your way of opening it up and leaving it on. You could do it it moves the mirror out of the way, so it allows you to just see the sensor, and you'd use it for cleaning the sensor as well before, but a lot of cameras have got their own sensor cleaning mode now for doing it. Bulb is just there to open the lens and you count your exposure. You'd use it Bulb is effectively the original way of taking a photograph. You know, you take the lens cap off and you'd count 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and then you put it back on, you'd have a 4-second exposure. It's the same process, but if you're going to use Bulb and shoot something like the ISS, then I'd suggest you put your camera out. You know roughly where the ISS is going to go across the sky because it'll tell you on the blogs that you look at. And Bulb is when you put it on the Bulb setting, you press and hold your shutter and it will stay open. Now, because it's open for a long period of time, don't press the shutter yourself. Get yourself a remote trigger and open it up. And also when you're using Bulb, it's a good idea to put a piece of black card or something like that over the front of the lens. Open up the shutter, then take away the black card, because if there's any wobble when the mirror actually moves, that'll be dissipated by the time you move the card away. Then shoot your exposure for 5 minutes or whatever, and then just let go and it'll close it all off. You can put the cap back on if you want. It doesn't make any difference. But once you've shot that, then it's done. It's all over and done with. You should be able to do the ISS pass invisible range is about 3.5 minutes. So 3.5 minutes, just crank everything right down, take your ISO right down, take your aperture right down, go out and shoot a test shot 10 minutes before it's due over, have a look back and see what the exposure's like, and you should get a lovely streak across the sky, and it should be a nice single streak. I keep meaning to do it, but every time I've been going on about people about using Bulb to shoot the ISS, we've had bloody cloud here, and we've got some fantastic passes at the moment. There was another one that was passed last night, but it was smack in the middle of the big show. What do you know? Never mind. They're going on about a lens stool on there in the chat room. So it looks like something to take a dump in. Thanks, mate. Nice to see you all concentrating on my show. If you've got a question, send it to us, breachchatnetwork@gmail.com. If you've got a review, post it in iTunes for us. We'll read it out. Doesn't matter what you say. Be as critical as you like. That's fine. I'll take it on the chin. But we love doing the podcast and we're going to keep going. UK2 are going to keep supporting us as well, because they're absolutely brilliant. They support our network wholly. They take up all the bandwidth that we've got. They never ever give us any grief over it. They've been with us for 3 years. They're going to be with us for at least another two, and hopefully I think Craig's coming to the bash, so that should be really nice. You can all say well done to him yourselves. You're buying loads of service from UK2, which is great. When you do, though, what you've got to do is go through our website, otherwise we don't get the kudos for sending you. They just think you've got the vouchers from a voucher code place or something like that. Go to uk2.net Go to breachtechnetwork.com, click on the UK2.net logo, and then come back, and there's loads of offer codes there as well. You'll save yourself an absolute fortune on UK2 service. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. You can pay with PayPal. You can pay with your credit card, and it'll just do the conversion and deduction. So you pay what you pay. PayPal's not too bad on conversion rates anymore at the moment, so that's really, really good. Doesn't have to be a UK provider. Doesn't have to be a UK service for you. You can buy it anywhere you fancy. So please support our network by buying your stuff for the web from UK2. Go and have a look at what the services are that they've got. They've got tons of stuff, and they've got promotions at the moment on co-location services, and you still get the discount even if you buy the co-location services at the reduced price at the moment. They're brilliant. Look after them because they look after us. Thank you very much. I'll see you again next week for another photo show as normal on Friday, 2 p.m. If you want to tune in live, there's a little chat room full of people here all giving me stick. Oh, I love them to bits. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and for the next 40 minutes or so, you've got me talking you through all of the photographic news from the week, all the stories that are out there, all of that kind of stuff, the products that have been released, absolutely everything, and also answering your questions. You've got a question, send it to me. I'll read it out, and I'll try and answer it as best I can. We've had some good ones again this week. Thank you to the people that have sent a question in. It's your questions that keep the end of the show going. The last 20 minutes or so is all yours. So if you've got a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and I will read it out and answer it best as I can. We've had some reviews. Thank you to the people that left reviews. First one is from Jacques. He says, I've been listening for over a year now. Love the show, and great for a British take on the photography world. I tend to get a little bored of the US podcasts. Since you've lost the other members of the team, I have to admit, though, that this has lost something for me. I'm sorry. It's all right, mate. You don't need to apologise. Needs must to a certain degree. Surely there are enough photographers out there who would help out. Even so, it's well worth the listen. Thanks for being honest, Jack. It's okay, mate. I don't have a problem with that at all. Are there other photographers out there? Yes, but the thing is, this is a school day. And not everyone works on a school day. I haven't worked on a Friday for ages because of doing these and all the other shows. So if there are photographers out there that want to join in, that's fine. But the other problem is as well, I can't kind of go from like a panel show with five people on it to then doing it myself again the following week. If people want to do it and they want to commit to doing it, more than welcome to send in. But there has to be a consistent format as far as I'm concerned. That's the only thing. And as I say, Alex is still out working, and Chris is raising a new baby and doing a software engineer's job. So there you go. Andy, this is an awesome show that caters for all comers in the field of photography. Ewan's holding his own very well at the moment, but he and the other guys have always been very generous with their advice and time. What really comes across is the breadth and depth of knowledge and experience being offered. Fortunately, it's presented in a fun and easy to digest manner that anyone can get to grips with. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Andy. Thank you very much. And Adam's written down, great news, great advice, and overall kept professionally informed. A great show from the British Tech Network. I can't find a fault at all. Do appreciate that as well, Adam. Thank you very much. So, the photo news to start us off then. What's been going on? One of the projects that's out there is a thing called the 4AM project. I heard about this briefly last year for the first time. But they've been going for 4 years, and they've decided that 14th of April, they were going to have a fantastic event where across the globe, at 4 a.m, people would go out and would take pictures of their towns, villages, and so on, and try and capture the moment of the 4 a.m. Birmingham held its own, and it was organised by a lady named Karen Strunks, and she actually holds the social media cafe here in Birmingham and runs all of that. And she said, you know, let's have one. It's brilliant. Well done. Good on you, Karen. And she went to the Bullring Shopping Centre. Now, if you haven't been to the Bullring Shopping Centre here in the UK, it's a very impressive architectural building. It looks gorgeous, and it's got a nice big bull out the front that's like the bullets in New York by the stock market. But the problem is they're not renowned for their laxness when it comes to photography. They don't let any pictures at all once you've crossed their boundary, and they own an awful huge amount of area that looks like it's public and it's not. So there's no photography at all without permission. If you do go and ask permission, they do give it you, so it's not draconian, but there's absolutely no tripods, absolutely no bags being left around or anything like that, for health and safety reasons, allegedly, which is fine. On a busy shopping day, it does get very busy down there, but Karen managed to secure the efforts of the Bullring Shopping Centre and the whole area, and as a result, they issued a whole loads of do's and don'ts. The walk will take place in Bullring's external spaces only. So they didn't even open up the shopping centre for them. Shopping centre's completely and utterly closed. They couldn't go in at 4 a.m. You can only take wider scenic shots, but you can't photograph directly into the stores or windows or the shop fronts, which is going to be really difficult to do in the front of a shopping centre. No tripods or monopods or lighting equipment will be allowed. This is for health and safety reasons and insurance purposes. It's 4 a.m. It's 4 a.m. in the morning. Yes, that one. You're taking part in the project at your own risk. However, there are lots of tips out there on night photography without using a tripod. It's a reasonably well-lit area, so it's not going to be horrific. But if they've turned the streetlights out, you're knackered. You're not going to take a picture of anything apart from the inside of your pocket. Keep your personal belongings with you at all times. If you can't carry something, don't bring it. And if you want to use your images of the ballroom commercially, you'll need to discuss with them directly about arranging to use them. I don't have a problem with any of the last bit there, but the problem with the tripods and monopods and lighting equipment... that's ridiculous, because lighting equipment means you can't bring a flash. You're going to go out and you're not going to take a flash with you. Crazy. There's no residents there either, so you're not going to bother anyone. Well done, 4 a.m. project. Well done, Karen Strunks. And bad luck for all the idiots that work at the Bullring Shopping Centre and have put all those draconian measures on. Not impressed. Not impressed at all. Nikon is the next story. They filed a patent in Japan. Now, this was actually filed last year in December 2012 for... it's kind of like a link between your lens and your body. So when you attach your lens, you kind of bind the two together and then you can have a passcode. The inspiration for it has come from using smartphones where you have to tap in your code before you can start using it. Once you've bound the lens to the body... then you put in your passcode whenever you want to use it, or if you take the lens off. If all of the kit goes missing, that's fine. But if someone detaches the lens and the body, if they then put it back together without the passcode, neither the body nor the lens will then work, which I think is an absolutely fabulous idea. I'm all for that, and I hope if Nikon have got it, they're willing to license it out at a sensible price to all the other camera manufacturers, because they have been awarded the patent. It's definitely gone through. There's no more details than that, and the patent was written in Japanese, and it's apparently the literal translation of it's not particularly brilliant at explaining how it's all going to work, but your stuff will be protected. If it's Nikon only, then well done. They've got the patent and someone else should have thought of it first. But if you can see them licensing it out, I really hope they do. I'd love to see this come on camera bodies and lenses for DSLR. And the market in DSLR is pretty good at the moment. So they should be able to sell it on. Not bad at all. Well done, Nikon. We like that. David Bailey has shouted out at the government, the aging photographer. You know, the thing is, you remember what drinking, smoking and women does to you. Have a look at a picture of David Bailey now. You see, it's really not worth it. Though I've seen some of the women that he took pictures of. It maybe it is. He's had a go at the government over the Orphan Works Bill. Now, Orphan Works over here, Orphan Works are when you've got no one who can be identified as being the rightful owner of an image. And the government's proposed legislation that says if there are orphan works out there, then the orphan works can go out to the public domain and anyone can use them for any purpose. And it's a good idea, effectively. But Bailey's problem is that orphans are being created constantly by irresponsible net providers. In a letter to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, he said he's appalled by the government's stance and calls for the subject to be dealt with properly, I quote, in a separate copyright bill and not be left to a general bill. This follows on from the story that we had the other week where we talked about the EXIF data and the IPTC data being stripped off images by certain internet providers, Flickr, Yahoo, Google, and put up onto the net. Google's pretty good with it. Flickr and Yahoo and Facebook, not so much. Basically, once your ITPC or EXIF data is gone, there is no way of tracing that image directly back to you at all. It just gets removed and that's it. You're done and dusted. If you've got the original image and you've clearly got the EXIF data on it, that would stand up in a court if you did take anyone to court. But it's a lot more of a rigmarole than just asserting your copyright via some kind of takedown notice or a letter just to say, hey, come on, take it off. He's right in what he's saying. The only thing I would say is that looking at images now online and believing that you have copyright control over them is a bit of a dinosaur kind of way of looking at it. I'm not suggesting David Bailey's a dinosaur, but you know, photographers across the world have got to realize if you start letting your images go out online, you are no longer going to have rights of ownership over them. I am very careful what I post online. You don't see awful lots of my work online, not because I don't do work. Some of it I can't publish it because it's commercial sensitive stuff. But a lot of it is the fact that once I put it out there, I know it's gone, plain and simple. I cannot control it. So if it's not mine, it's not mine. It's gone. So don't put your stuff online unless you want to lose it. And the same applies to David. And don't drink and smoke and shag really beautiful women, because that's what happens to you. See? Not good. Not good at all. As you can see, I don't drink much. I don't smoke at all. And as for women, I'm married. Next iPhone rumor is that there is going to be a 12 megapixel camera coming on it. Now, traditionally, the S variants have always done pretty well for the photographic elements. I think the 4S went up to 8 megapixel, and we had the faster transition with version 5 of iOS and that kind of thing, so you could take more rapid pictures and be ready to shoot more quickly. This version, they reckon, is going to come out with a 12 megapixel camera. It's going to improve low light performance. Now, if they're going to improve low light performance, I would suggest that they're probably either come up with some fantastic technology for the sensor, or they're going to increase the sensor size just a little bit, which wouldn't be a bad thing. And they're talking about having HDR in it. Well, you've got a pseudo HDR in inverted commas, if you like, in your current setup, haven't you? But this is supposed to be a more realistic HDR, or more what's the word, you know, where it's authentic HDR process rather than a fudged one which was in there before. But as I say, the S variant, 5S, is going to have better stuff on it. I think 12 megapixels is a good thing. I think that's not bad at all, providing they've keep the quality up. The, you know, the megapixels are not the only thing, but it's got to have a lot more. There are phones out there with better sensors, said Adam. The Xperia Z has got 13 megapixels with XMOR sensors. S4's got 13 megapixels. Yeah, S4's got a very good camera in it. I've seen some test shots of that, and I saw the S3, and it was very good. Wind Rider in the chat room says bigger sensor would be a good idea. I know they're packed for space in there, but they've done better and so on with the battery and reducing the size. I took my iPhone 4 apart last year after I really smashed it on the front, and I had a look at the camera module while I got it out, and the actual camera module is extremely small. It's basically, if you look at the circle that the camera sits in, the square behind it is it. That is the sensor and processing unit. So it's very small to begin with. So yeah, bigger sensor would be nice. Last thing it needs is more pig megapixels, says Ultimate Games. Well, yeah, I agree in terms of megapixels is not the answer to the question. Megapixels is about improving your image size, but unless your quality goes with it, it is a waste of time. I'll agree. You don't just need a bigger sensor. There you go. That was the news. Those are the stories this week. There's not been an awful lot, really. Most of it has actually been concentrated on the products. And there's quite a few product releases this week. Some are interesting, some not so interesting. This one is the Nikon L28. It's relatively new. It's been out a week or two. It's a 20 megapixel camera. Yes, you heard me right. 20 megapixels in a compact camera. I would not get too excited, however, because it's not a huge camera, so this is not going to be a huge sensor. Megapixel increase plus big sensor is even better, says Wind Rider. Yes, that's the key. It's not just the megapixels. This thing's got a 5x optical zoom. It's a fully automated camera. And you're going, okay, well, they've all got a full automation feature. No, this camera is automated. There's no manual settings on it at all. You can't do manual exposure, nothing. You take this on auto, or that's it. And there's actually a second auto mode called easy auto mode. And easy auto mode actually selects the correct mode of photography. So you could select that you want to take a portrait, but if you put it on easy mode, it knows whether it's a portrait, a landscape, or anything like that. It's real, real simple. It does everything for you. It's also got a feature in it called the smile timer, which has absolutely nothing to do with time at all. It doesn't time anything. Effectively, when you've got it on smile timer, it looks at the image, and if someone smiles, the camera takes a picture whether you press the shutter or not. It just went off in me hands, Mom. Yes, it did. How big a smile you have to have, I don't know. It would be nice to think that there'd be a full smile timer as opposed to a partial smile timer. Everyone's going to have a sick grin on their face through every picture that you take. It doesn't run on rechargeable batteries. It runs on twin AA batteries. You could stick your own rechargeables in, but there's no recharging port. There's no external dial controls on this thing at all. It is very simple. There is an on and off switch on the top, and then there is a wide angle and telephoto zooming button, and then the shutter button, and that is it. There's a flush flash, which it decides when it wants to use, not you. There's only four settings available inside, which looks at the basic resolution of the image, so you can downscale or upscale your images on the megapixel. White balance, burst mode, and color options as well. There is no ISO setting on this thing. Not a thing. No worries at all. No, you can't even get lost in what ISO is. That doesn't give you the option to change a damn thing, even in the software. The only thing that has got variants on it is the white balance. So you can have auto, or you can have cloudy, or you can have tungsten light, or fluorescent light, and all of the big options for white balance, which most people don't understand anyway, they're all in there. You can pick those as you want, but nothing else. That's it. It shoots at 6 frames per second in burst mode, which is not particularly huge, but the problem is once it's shot 6 frames, according to the review I read, it takes 25 seconds to write it to the card, almost regardless of what card you put in. So it's not based on the speed of the card. It's based on the fact this thing can't process them. It's that bad at processing. Apparently, the bulge on the top there as well that you can see is to allow the space for the batteries, because the batteries cause the bulge. So that gives you a clear indication of just how small this camera is. It's not big at all. Give me an idea on price here, chat room, and I'll tell you what the actual price is. But just give me your perceptions while I'm reading the last bit out. And it only shoots 720p video. It doesn't shoot 1080p video at all. So how much would you pay for this camera? I'm waiting for the chat room to come back with what they would pay for this camera in their relative currency. 200 quid, says Rick. So that's a good entry camera. 200 quid, it's kind of disposable. Windrider reckons it's $900. No, it's not, mate. Here's the shocker. £74. Yep, you heard me right, £74. You can get it at Amazon in a red version at the moment for 74 quid. And I've got to say, I looked at that and thought, bloody hell, this is a piece of crap. Well, it is, but it's a cheap piece of crap. And it's perfect to buy and give the kids. I would buy that for 74 quid and give it to my little girl and say, darling, here's your very first camera. Off you go. Because she loves taking pictures with her mum's camera. I'm scared with her mum's phone. I'm scared to death of her dropping her mum's phone. So to give her a £74 camera that she'll probably use for a couple of years, it'll probably still take reasonably decent photos. They're not going to be that bad, are they? And she'd be very happy with them. She can shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, fill a card up, and then I can take them all and save them. We can print the odd one out if she manages to catch them. There's Briny's first masterpiece and all that kind of thing. 74 quid's all right. Well done. I've got no problem with that. The review was on a professional camera blog, and they gave it an absolute pasting. And I thought, you've missed the point here, guys. That's not what this is aimed at. This is aimed at someone who wants to buy a camera for a 4-year-old, to a 6-year-old, to a 10-year-old, to a 90-year-old grandma who wants to really, really, really point and shoot, nothing else. So, well done, Nikon. I think you can safely say with that one, you're in the complete range of cameras, all the way up and all the way down. Lightroom's got a new version out in beta, the Granny Cam. Says Windrider. Let me just get a pen because I think that might be the title, mate. The Granny Cam. Lightroom's out this week, version 5. It's in beta. You can go and have a download and a trial of it if you want. There's loads and loads of new features. One of them looks pretty good. It's the ability to stand things upright. So there's a picture here of a couple of horses in a paddock, and because of the angle that you're at, there's like a keystone effect on the thing that goes over the top of them. And what it does is it looks at the image and it crops it. Admittedly, you're not going to get full image quality on this, but it crops it and it gives you a very square view of the fence to correct your keystone effect, or maybe even it'll do something with a fisheye effect as well. Pricing's the same as ever. There's no change on price when it comes out, but as I say, they're in beta at the moment only. There's an improved healing brush for greater ability to change and correct faults. The radial gradient feature helps to look for faults in vignetting issues and things like that. There's a thing called smart previews as well, which lets you change around through the previews that you want to look at based on keywords or on values. And there's a video slideshow, and this will let you take any stills, any video or any music that you've got and turn them into a small slideshow at the duration that you want and output them as a movie file for you to show on something else. And also there's an upgrade to the book ordering process. Whether there's some templates in there or not, I think there is, but it improves the process of book ordering as well, allegedly. ProDad have released or announced a piece of software called ProDrenaline. Now, ProDrenaline is designed for people who use GoPro cameras or action cameras, that kind of thing. And effectively, it just takes the video that you've shot in the camera, you put it into the system. In the top left-hand corner, you can just see on the image I've got in the video, it says GoPro Hero 3, and it gives you a resolution. And you can say what the resolution that you've shot it at is and whether it was in a case or out of a case and that kind of thing. Does HD2 as well. And it corrects the fisheye on it. It also looks for image stabilization capabilities, and it will automatically stabilize the image for you. And then it will let you export it back out as MFV, M4V, so you can put it out as different file types as well. There's no word on the price that it's going to be yet, but there's a program called DFisher from ProDad, which they've sent me as a review copy, and that's only €29, so it's not the end of the world. And I had a play with it, and it's not bad at all. I sent my little helicopter up to take a still image of the local village. So there's the image, a nice big panorama of the local area where I live and the next two villages beyond, up to the church in Kozel on the far side. But it's very fish-eyed. I ran it through the DFisher program, and it's not perfect, but it's an awful lot better. You could probably tweak it a little bit more, but it started to look more unnatural than after that, so I left it alone. But you can definitely see a change, and it's a change for the better. So the ProAdrenaline software will probably do very well in this process. I've also got Mexler, or I can't remember the bloody name of it, begins with an M, but that's the Steadicam software, and I'm going to have a play with that this week. I haven't had much time to have a mess so far, but I think this is going to be quite good. What's the price going to be? I don't know. If it's hitting around the £30 mark, this would be a really good thing to buy if you're into your GoPro cameras, or even there's a whole list in there of Samsung for correcting your fisheye effects on cell phones. So well worth it. Well worth it. And the lady there, Catherine, that's been dealing with me, lovely, lovely lady as well. I think they're quite a nice firm. So I'll keep you posted when I get reviews or when I get the nod that ProDrenaline's available for download. I'll let everyone know. Frio have released the cold shoe. The cold shoe mount is just a clip that fits on different places and allows you to mount your flash off camera. It doesn't have any trigger capabilities. There's no electronics in it. Effectively, it just lets you latch it onto the stand and put it anywhere you like so that you can get off camera shots. Price, it's a tenner. £9.99 or $12, and that's it. It's very simple. It does what it says on the tin, I suppose, and if you want that, then fair enough. Fuji have released a zoom lens. This is a 55 to 200 millimeter lens, 3.5 to 4.8 on the f-stop. It's going to be to fit your X-Pro 1 or your XE 1, and it's got image stabilization abilities within it as well. And it means that they reckon that they're going to improve shutter speed at low light by 4 to 5 stops, which is absolutely huge if it really does do it. And that's an awful lot of stabilization. It's got one third EV stops aperture ring, a focusing ring, two linear motors for high-speed autofocus. And they reckon with this, the high-speed autofocus is going to drag in focus at 0.28 of a second from the press, so you're up to sports lens kind of levels of autofocus there, which is very, very good. Unfortunately, there's nothing on the story that tells when it's going to be available or says what the price is going to be. Chat room are no doubt going to correct me, but there is nothing that I could find on the net this week that showed me how that was going to be. Couple of hundred quid, yes, you'd definitely buy it. It looks like it's fantastic, and I say the speed of autofocus on this is the thing that really leapt out at me. The speed at which it's going to grab things is right up there with very good sports lenses. Also, Fuji has let slip with their roadmap for lenses. 2013, The XF55-200, you can see it there at the bottom, is coming out. Coming up in the next quarter, we've got the XF27mm pancake lens with 2.8, which is going to go into direct competition with the 40mm pancake lens at 2.8, I guess, for video work, but give you just a slightly wider aperture. And then they've got a 23mm lens at f1.4 that's coming out in the last quarter, and also a 10-24 f4 lens as well, which should be nice. And then early part of 2014, there's a 56mm f1.2. So they're looking at the low aperture stuff here, definitely. Well done, Fuji. I'll see what they come out with some images, but so far it looked very promising. Ricoh, do you remember them? Ricoh have released the GR. Now, the GR used to be a 35mm body, and this one looks very reminiscent of what that used to look like. This has got an additional lens that you can screw on the front at additional price, and it's got an optical viewfinder that fits on the top. There's no electronic viewfinder that fits on this. If you buy the extra lens to give you the wider angle, then it looks like that. Specs on this, it's a 16.2 megapixel APS-C sensor, so it's a larger sensor that's got better light, low light capability. The stories that I read compared this to the Nikon Coolpix A, which is an awful lot more expensive than this one is. It's got ISO ranges from 100 to 25,600, 18mm lens f2.8. That corrects, I think, with crop though to 24-ish, something like that, 23. A 1.2 million dot LCD screen on the back that's 3 inches wide. And it'll shoot in JPEG and DNG, SD and SDHC memory cards. And it weighs in at 215 grams, so it's not exactly the end of the world. It's nice and small, nice and compact. It's a good compact camera. Price on this, well, it's competing with a lot of stuff at the quality of image that they're talking about, which is going to be around the £1,000 mark. But the difference with this one is it's coming in at £599, so it's about the $800 mark. Which makes it very competitive, maybe. If the quality of the image is good, then you could see a lot of the other more expensive cameras start to miss out on this one. That's a Ricoh GR. Flex Lens have released the product. It's called the Flex Lens, and it's a piece of Velcro that takes a black shade, which is all wibbly-wobbly, and it straps it to your lens. So it's effectively a lens shade, nothing more than that, a lens hood. It only fits over the top. It stops you getting rain on it, and it stops you getting nasty bits of gubbins, perhaps, or a bit of glare off the sun. It's okay. It's fine. The Velcro strap's probably a very quality-made piece of Velcro, but this thing is $40. And I've got to say, if you're going to buy this at $40, you might as well have a sign on your back saying "kick me," because it's just not good enough. I'm sorry. I've looked at all the pictures of this online, and this is really a piece of crap. At $40, get yourself a piece of paper and some gaffer tape, same effect. And actually, if you use white paper, you'll get some opacity as well, so you can end up with not stealing all your light with it. It's nasty, and it's not cheap, unfortunately. Don't buy it, whatever you do. And the last product that's come out this week is Sigma. They've released an 18-35mm lens. It's quite compact, but it packs f-stops at 1.8 with a fixed aperture. It looks very, very good. No word on the price on it, unfortunately. That's the key factor with this, but I don't think it's going to be too cheap at that amount, with that amount of zoom. It's got a weight of 810 grams, so it's a fairly hefty lens. There'll be good quality pieces of glass in it at that weight. That's nearly as much as the Canon 24-70, which is a very heavy lens. It's not going to be something that you've seen before. Maybe it's designed for crop factor sensors only, and it's got 9 aperture blades, an ultrasonic autofocus and silent motors, and it's 72mm filter size, which is not going to be a cheap filter to buy. And you can maximum aperture is going to take you up to f16. Minimum aperture is going to take you up to f16 on it. Max aperture is f1.8. No word on price, no word on availability. So it's kind of like CES, really. But if the price is good and it's sensible at sort of the £400 to £500 mark, that'd be a cracking buy. If it's not and it's at £1,200, then I'm afraid they've lost me. Plus the fact I haven't got a APS-C size sensor and signal. We'll see. We'll see. Right, thank you. Those are the products. There's no other products. Your questions. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out. We'll do your question. First question comes from Martin. He says, hi, Ewan. I recently inherited a lot of camera gear from my father after he passed away, and I decided I should take up it as a hobby and not just sell it all on. Good lad. He left me a lovely range of equipment, including film and digital, which has clearly been really well looked after. Within the bags, I found lots of odd parts, but particularly I found two filters which look slightly grey to slightly clear. They are 60 millimetres in diameter and have on them a notation which says LBA on one and LBB on the other. I've taken some pictures with these, but I can't tell what they're doing or are supposed to do. Can you help, please? Regards, Martin. Right. LBA is a notation which denotes that it's a warming filter. And LBB is a notation that dictates that it's a cooling filter. So if you're saying they're both fairly clear, though, Martin, that wouldn't be right. Because if it was a warming filter, it would have a distinct yellow tinge to it. And if it was a cooling filter, it would have a distinct grey tinge to it. Now, you're saying that they're grey to clear. So that would probably mean that the cooling filter is still working okay, but the other one shouldn't be. The LBA should be warm. It should be yellow. If it's not yellow or not got a yellow tinge, hold it up to a light and turn it to about 15 degrees to your eye line, and if there is any coating left on it, you should see it. But I'd say that the coatings have been scrubbed off, or the lens has been replaced on it, or the filter's been replaced on it or something, but I can't think why you'd do that. If you're saying it's doing nothing to an image, there's definitely something wrong. And if you're saying that they're not a distinct difference in colour from each other, then there's definitely something wrong. So one's cooling, one's warming. The cooling one should be grey. The warming one should be yellowy, browny, orange. Further than that, I can't help, mate, unless you want to send them to me. I'll gladly have a look at them. Send me an email and I'll send me an address and you can post them on. But there's something wrong with that. That ain't right, I'm afraid. Unless LBA relates to something. I mean, the only other LBA I've seen before is lens buying addiction, which is an amateur disease. Though I've got a fair few lenses myself, it has to be said. No. Don't know, mate. I have no clue. But that doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound right at all. Next one's from John. Hi, Ewan. Love the show. Thanks for all your efforts with BTN. Welcome, mate. I listened with interest to this week's show regarding the cropping of images with 3:2 ratios for frame size, which are not built for them. One other issue which bothers me regularly is understanding the optimal size to pixel ratio when editing or outputting for print. I use Lightroom and Elements and just wanted some guidance on what would be the best setup for images. Keep up the PPI or control the image size in millimeters/inches, etc. PPI is points per inch or pixels per inch or that kind of thing. So that's the number of pixels in a given inch squared of density. I don't know. What do I do, I suppose? Whenever you shoot your image and you open it up, by default, it shows you the image and it gives you one pixel to one canvas size. So your canvas size will automatically be 5,000 by 3,000, whatever it is. To give you the accurate image size. So there's no PPI on that to really worry about. If you then want to copy that and paste it into a document that's, say, 8 by 10 or that's 16 by 12 or something like that, then once you've created that image size, you'll create a resolution within that. So when you open your new document, it'll say, right, do you want this at 72 PPI or do you want it at 300 DPI? At 300 DPI, when you copy and then paste that image in, the image will appear to be smaller than if you pasted it into a document which is 72 PPI, because in fact, you know, they're taking the pixels and it's arranging them on that image ratio. In terms of if you create a document, you would always create one in 300 PPI for a printed output, and then when you bring your image in, if you need to resize it, the bicubic interpolation will do well up to about 140% of original size. If you're doing something like an 8 by 10 or a 16 by 12 and you take an image from a raw file, say, and then dump it straight into that document at 300 ppi, should find that the image that you're dumping in is slightly bigger than 16 by 12 when you actually look at it anyway. But if you're, it'd be touch and go. If you're dumping it into an 8 by 10, it should be a fair bit bigger than that. So I would say any of your output formats, you want the image that you're going to send to you, to PhotoBox or your online printers, to be 300 ppi, and you want to resize the image to crop inside that space while it's a 300 ppi document, and then output it and send it as JPEG or send it as TIFF, whatever they want to see. But is there an optimum? The key to think is that once you've got your raw image there that you've taken out your camera, raw as in just the untouched image, that's going to be in pixels per inch. So, you know, one pixel is one size. The size is the size does. And once you copy that and paste it into the document, you've then got to think whether you're shrinking it to fit that document or expanding it to fit that document. And with 72 ppi, you're going to get a grainier output. So a canvas, for example, you might want to do at 72 or 150 ppi as opposed to 300 ppi, because you won't get the benefit of seeing 300 ppi quality on a canvas that's rippled every quarter centimetre. So there isn't a right or a wrong, but for printed output to, say, like a gloss still, I would always go for 300 ppi. If you're going for canvas, go for less. That'd be fine. Next question is from Gary. Hi, Ewan. Loving the new style of the show. Keep up the great work. Not everyone agrees with you, mate, but thank you very much. The other week you mentioned taking images of the ISS using Bulb. Simply, what is Bulb? I've looked in my manual, but I can't find it. Well, I don't know what camera you've got, Gary, because you haven't specified it. A lot of cameras will come, a lot of DSLRs will come with the Bulb setting. And the Bulb setting is effectively just your way of opening it up and leaving it on. You could do it for, it moves the mirror out of the way, so it allows you to just see the sensor, and you'd use it for cleaning the sensor as well before, but a lot of cameras have got their own sensor cleaning mode now for doing it. Bulb is just there to open the lens and you count your exposure. You'd use it with, Bulb is effectively the original way of taking a photograph. You know, you take the lens cap off and you'd count 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and then you put it back on, you'd have a 4-second exposure. It's the same process, but if you're going to use Bulb and shoot something like the ISS, then I'd suggest you put your camera out. You know roughly where the ISS is going to go across the sky because it'll tell you on the blogs that you look at. And Bulb is when you put it on the Bulb setting, you press and hold your shutter and it will stay open. Now, because it's open for a long period of time, don't press the shutter yourself. Get yourself a remote trigger and open it up. And also when you're using Bulb, it's a good idea to put a piece of black card or something like that over the front of the lens. Open up the shutter, then take away the black card, because if there's any wobble when the mirror actually moves, that'll be dissipated by the time you move the card away. Then shoot your exposure for 5 minutes or whatever, and then just let go and it'll close it all off. You can put the cap back on if you want, it doesn't make any difference. But once you've shot that, then it's done. It's all over and done with. You should be able to do ISS pass invisible range is about 3.5 minutes. So 3.5 minutes, just crank everything right down, take your ISO right down, take your aperture right down, go out and shoot a test shot 10 minutes before it's due over, have a look back and see what the exposure's like, and you should get a lovely streak across the sky, and it should be a nice single streak. I keep meaning to do it, but every time I've been going on about people about using Bulb to shoot the ISS, we've had bloody cloud here, so, and we've got some fantastic passes at the moment. There was another one that was passed last night, but it was smack in the middle of the big show. What do you know? Never mind. They're going on about a lens stall on there in the chat room. So it looks like something to take a dump in. Thanks, mate. Nice to see you all concentrating on my show. If you've got a question, send it to us, breachchatnetwork@gmail.com. If you've got a review, post it in iTunes for us. We'll read it out. Doesn't matter what you say. Be as critical as you like. That's fine. I'll take it on the chin. But we love doing the podcast and we're going to keep going. UK2 are going to keep supporting us as well, because they're absolutely brilliant. They support our network wholly. They take up all the bandwidth that we've got. They never ever give us any grief over it. They've been with us for 3 years. They're going to be with us for at least another two, and hopefully I think Craig's coming to the bash, so that should be really nice. You can all say well done to him yourselves. You're buying loads of service from UK2, which is great. When you do, though, what you've got to do is go through our website, otherwise we don't get the kudos for sending you. They just think you've got the vouchers from a voucher code place or something like that. Go to uk2.net go to bridgetechnetwork.com, click on the UK2.net logo, and then come back, and there's loads of offer codes there as well. You'll save yourself an absolute fortune on UK2 service. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. You can pay with PayPal, you can pay with your credit card, and it'll just do the conversion and deduction. So you pay what you pay. PayPal's not too bad on conversion rates anymore at the moment, so that's really, really good. Doesn't have to be a UK provider, doesn't have to be a UK service for you. You can buy it anywhere you fancy. So please support our network by buying your stuff for the web from UK2. Go and have a look at what the services are that they've got. They've got tons of stuff, and they've got promotions at the moment on co-location services, and you still get the discount even if you buy the co-location services at the reduced price at the moment. They're brilliant. Look after them because they look after us. Thank you very much. I'll see you again next week for another photo show as normal on Friday, 2 p.m. If you want to tune in live, there's a little chat room full of people here all giving me stick. Oh, I love them to bits. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.